The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome once again, folks, to Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. And every weekend we gather like this, we get to talk sports with some really interesting people. We get on the air because of the engineering skills of Jeffrey Sinis. He's been doing it for 15 plus years. He's good. And Andrew Herdliska does the producing. Brian Dawkins is with us in this first segment. Brian Dawkins had a long career in the NFL. He was drafted by the Eagles, 16 years in Philadelphia, or 16 total, 13 in Philly. And he's written a book. It's called Blessed by the Best, My Journey to Canton and Beyond. Brian, welcome. It's good to catch up with you. How are you doing?
I'm absolutely blessed. Thank you for having me, Pat.
Brian, I'm fascinated. You now are a full-time resident here in Central Florida, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Happily.
How did that end up? How did you end up here?
Well, this is our second stint here. We purchased a home here back in, I think it was like 2004, for the off season when we're going back and forth to Philly when the kids were young. When I got picked up in Denver, we sold the home here and we moved out to Denver. And, you know, after I retired and did a couple of coaching stints, a little bit at my son's high school and did some executive work before I did executive work for the Eagles, I began to pray about, okay, so is this where you want me to be, Lord, or where should I be? And so our hearts got pulled back, to Orlando.
Yeah, we're blessed to have you in town. That's wonderful. Brian, what brought this book about? How long did it take to write? Why was it important to you?
So what brought this book about was literally me when I was preparing for my speech for my Hall of Fame induction. And I don't write my speeches. I just grab a couple of words here, a name there, and I go from the heart. But when I was doing that, a lot of people had admiration, and I appreciate that. But I really felt that people thought that things have always just worked out. And that's far from the case. There's so many things that they didn't know. And so the book was an opportunity for me to then share some of the things that I've grown through in my life. And I say that on purpose, grow through, not just go through. You go through something, you're going to go through a similar thing until you grow through it, till you grab it. Because I believe that's what the Lord does to us when he's using those things, those instances, for us to learn something so that we can do things better going forward. So that's where the book came out. I wanted to do some things to share some things with some individuals who may see me as someone to be inspired by, and then see how I look back over my life and see how certain things that were painful in the process turned out to be some of the most powerful instruments that I use going forward, wisdom-wise, in my life.
Brian, what did your years at Clemson University mean to you?
Wow, my years at Clemson, first of all, it told me that I can do it. It told me that I can go to school, that I can go to college, and I can get my work done, and that I can have success at anything I truly put my all into. Because I didn't know. I didn't know if I could make it at Clemson. I didn't know if I was going to keep my grades. I didn't know. But when I did it, and I began to have success with it, you know, those endorphins begin to creep into the body, and your body gets you the feel-good chemicals from your brain. Like, I knew that I can do it. I knew I can have success. So with the mindset that I developed growing up, some of it given to by my dad, some of it given to her by my mom. I use those skill sets, those mindsets, to continue to persevere, push for, and to grind. And so Clemson, me going there and earning my way, because I wasn't I wasn't supposed to be what I put it this way. They didn't expect me to be the one to make it to the NFL to be a Hall of Famer. They literally was expecting someone else, which was my teammate, to be the individual that would do great things at Clemson and then also do great things in the NFL.
Brian Dawkins is our guest. Brian, what do you remember about the 1996 NFL draft when you were selected by the Eagles in the second round?
I remember being extremely, like, tearfully joyous. I did it. Like, and again, it goes to that premise I just talked about. It wasn't supposed to be me to make it to the National Football League for my neighborhood. It was supposed. It could have been so many other people. And matter of fact, Pop Warner. Like, it was supposed to be so many other people. But here I was. I was the one that was about to take that step into the next level to do what millions of people would love to be doing. But also on that same vein of thought, I was frustrated. I was angry and frustrated that I went the last pick of the second round. In my mind, I thought it was a third round pick. So I was a third round doggone pick. And it literally was because of my size. Had I been bigger, had I been what they would call eye candy, 6 foot, 6'1", 215, 230, something too big like that, oh, I would have went easily in the first one. But because I was smaller, slender and small at that time, that I would always question about what I can do. Could I make it? Could I do this? Would I be able to make it in the NFL as a safety? Like, could I play corner? Do you might have to play nickel? You might make it special teams. So all of these questions were around me. But had I been bigger, think about it. Just if I'd have been bigger, I would have had none of those questions, and I would have went in the first round.
Tell me about your coach, one of your coaches in Philly, Andy Reid.
So Andy came in after my first 2 years with coach Ray Rhodes and, you know, one of my greatest mentors, Emmett Thomas. So what Emmett and Ray did was Ray awoken something in me to go out and believe that I can do anything. When Andy got there, and he had a specific way he wanted to do things, which is cool. He had a plan how we're going to have success going forward. But what Andy and his wisdom did, he brought in Jim Johnson. To me, one of the greatest defensive coordinator minds of all time. And so those two individuals with their plan allowed us to then take what we had grown and bonded into during some tough times with Ray Rhodes, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And now when we step with Andy with his game plan, now he also gave us the ability to lead. Like, sometimes you have a coach that he wants everything to go through him, right? Almost like a dictatorship. That was not Andy. Andy was like, yes, I'm going to have the things that we need to do, but it's going to be up to you to handle things in the locker room, handle small things going on in the locker room, right? So he gave us the power and the I won't say okay because we're going to do it anyway, but he gave us the power to lead from the locker room.
Brian Dawkins, his book is out, Blessed by the Best, My Journey to Canton and Beyond. Brian, do you remember your reaction when you got word that you'd been elected into the NFL Hall of Fame?
Oh, yeah, I was joyous. I was extremely joyous. But the thing about that is I had already dreamed it the year before. So when I went the year before, when I was the first time that I was had an opportunity to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, I didn't make it the first year. But it was during that year that I took a nap as we're supposed to be waiting for the phone call or the knock on the door, right? I took a nap, and in that dream, I dreamed, and I had that vision that I would receive a phone call, and they would let me know that I made it, right? So obviously, I didn't make it that first year, but then when the next year came around, I knew I was going to make it that next year, So I was excited. Don't get me wrong. I was still joyous. My kids were yelling. My wife was yelling. And so it was extremely joyful. But I had already seen it the year before that I was going to make it via phone call.
Brian Dawkins is with us. Explain to us how you grew spiritually as a Christian athlete during your years in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Let me go back real quick. So the reason why that I received a phone call.
Yes.
I wanted to make sure that I clarify that. I was an executive for the Eagles at the time, and we as the Eagles were at the Minnesota to play in the Super Bowl. So because I was in a different hotel than the other potential Hall of Famers that were up that year, that's why I received the phone call, because I was not in the hotel for him to come knock on the door. So I wanted to make that clear. That's how that happened. Now, going to your question, I've always had believers in my life, my mom and my dad, Christians, but it was literally my grandmom, I call her St. Dawkins. She's 104 now, that she was the epitome. Like when I think of a believer and how a believer doesn't leave church in church, does not leave the lessons learned. When you sit down and read the Bible, you don't leave them there. You take them with you. When I say that, that's her, because that's how she lived her life. I've never seen her lose herself in anger. She can get stern. I've never seen her, and I doesn't curse. She's never used profanity. I've asked my uncles and aunts the same thing. No, she doesn't lose herself. So she was able to display the characteristics, the fruits of the Spirit on a regular basis. So I saw that. But I didn't accept Christ into my life until 90. But it was literally out of fear the first time that I accepted him, because I didn't know where I would be if I died that day. And so, but after that, when the Holy Spirit was placed inside of me, I began to become eager to find out more about the relationship that is needed, or the relationship that needs to develop. I'm sorry, the relationship that needs to be developed in order for you to be the best that you can be, that He has placed inside of you from the beginning. And so that took off, going to Bible studies, going to FCA meetings and all of those things, but it really didn't go to the highest of levels until I went to the deepest and darkest of places after my rookie year.
My guest is Brian Dawkins. We've got another segment with Brian. We got to take time for some messages, and then we will be right back with the NFL Hall of Famer. I'm Pat Williams, your host, the show Inside the Game, the call letters, AM 950 and FM 94.9, The Answer in Orlando. Brian Dawkins, who lives here in Central Florida, his book is out, Blessed by the Best, My Journey to Canton and Beyond. Brian, I want you to tell us about the role that chaplains play with NFL teams, and what's the fellowship like with fellow believers within the roster of NFL teams? Can you expand on that?
They're powerful when they're allowed to be. Sometimes the chaplain is in some places are seen as just something that a box to check off. But then there are other places that understand the significance of the spiritual development and how that plays an important role in you developing the mental and the physical attributes to be stronger in every part of you. So for the Philadelphia Eagles, we had a fantastic, fantastic group of believers. And in those Bible study sessions, we call it the cave. So we would go into the cave and we would have some real conversations. And we would talk about some real things that young men dealt with. And we would go through how the Bible instructs us to deal with all of those things and how we are empowered by the Word of God, how we can have, I call them words of war, I call them fighting words. You can have these fighting words to fight off these things that will come against us. lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, the things that would come against those in those areas, we can now have word to place in our hearts so that when those things and temptations and things come our way, we have those verses and the relationship with God to lean upon to move. I mean, with the Eagles, I remember us, we would have prayer every Wednesday, I believe it was. After lunch, before we would do weights or before we would do other things, we would have about 30 minutes and we would just go in and just pray, just be led in the Spirit and just lay down and pray in a specific room. And it was about 10 of us that would do that, 10 of us that would do that. But it would be literally like sometimes 20 guys in Bible study when we did have it on Thursdays. So that unction was extremely powerful to have, not just people who were in there studying the Bible, but it was some of your best players that were talking about the Word of God. Now, I'm not pushing what I believe on nobody. I always say it like this. I'm respectfully bold with my faith. But the greatest message that I'll ever preach is the life that I live. So my life should speak to you so that you can then see the light that's in me, and then you should be drawn to that to want to ask me questions. Or why do you do like that? How do you do? Now we can begin to dive into those words, the Bible and the like. That's how it happens with me anyway.
Brian, the last chapter of your book is called Building Bridges, Bringing Hope. What's that about?
So that's this phase, this season, I won't say phase, that's this season of my life. And I was doing that even when I was playing, still helping people. I believe that that's what we're supposed to do. Proverbs talks about when you bless other people, you're lending to God, right? So we're supposed to help other people. We're supposed to give. We're supposed to do things not from a place of obligation, but from a place of empathy and love for our fellow man. And one of the things I talked about, not you want to build the bridges, because sometimes the person that you may have it out with may be in a dark place in that moment. And the way that you respond to that situation can help them see a different way of doing things. And you maybe can connect with that person another season to do some good things together. But if you burn that bridge and you condemn that person for the actions and you hate the person, not the sin, that type of thing, then you prevent yourself from potentially doing some significant things down the road with people. So that's how I do it. And then with the platform that I've been blessed to earn, to have and to earn, now I can speak from a different perspective of how success can be had. And it's the good success the Bible talks about. God gives you good success. Now, there's success could be gained in different ways, right? But I want good success. I want success that God has given me the ability to have. And I only want the thing that he has for me. I don't want other people's stuff. I want what God has for me to have now. And then I'm supposed to then bless people from that overflow, bless people from that abundance that then God then gives me, because I'm living that righteous life. Now I'm supposed to be blessing others with that overflow and from that overflow.
Brian, what do you feel God is calling you to do the rest of your life? Is it coaching? Is it life in the NFL? Is it something totally different?
So the NFL was a great season of my life. Great season of my life. I enjoyed the heck out of it. But football was what I did. It's not who I am. It's not who I am. So many people get caught up in their job being who they are. And when you do that, then you lose out on all God, a lot of things that God would have you to do with what you have been given. Because he blessed you with the ability to, he blessed me with the ability to play football. But that's not all that I can do. So one of the things that I know that I'm gifted to do is to motivate, to inspire and motivate. Inspire comes from a word that literally talks about breathing into. So you're breathing life, you're breathing inspiration, you're breathing things into other people. I'm blessed to be able to do that. So that's what I will be doing going forward in my life. Life coaching, I have this Brian Dawkins It's going to be the Weapon X Academy. And we're going to be talking about things to help people who are passionate and or who wants to become more passionate, how they can go after life, how they can do things and retrain their brains and their thoughts by taking your captive your thoughts and by doing things on a continuous basis every day to stay winning in life. So those are some of the things that I'll be doing going forward.
Brian, I think you may be called to preach. Sounds that way to me. you may be the next Tony Evans.
So here's the thing. It's not for me to tell me what I'm going to be doing. It's for me to listen to what the Holy Spirit tells me to do, and then I'll move in that direction. But I know this. I know that not all people who are ministers stand behind pulpits.
Yes. Yeah, that's extremely accurate. Extremely accurate. Brian, what are your thoughts about all the recent discussion about the hiring of black coaches, the hiring of black front office executives? Seems it's been a big story recently. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's frustrating. It's frustrating because this is not the first time that it's had the same conversations about the same exact practices. And so some of the same examples and answers that are given by other people were the same exact answers that were given. That's like going back when I was in my first couple of years, and I remember Johnny Cochran, when he was alive, getting on the NFL about their hiring practices. And I remember some of the same verbiage that have been used right now. Are we going to do better things? We're going to look into it. We're going to have independent researchers. All of that stuff was done then, and you're back to this space again. So it's frustrating. And so for me, being a part of the NFLPA when I was playing and I was an executive member there, I recognize that a lot of times, sad to say, a lot of times, the things that have been gained by players for us has come through litigation. So it's not from the kindness of someone's heart that we're going to do these things. It usually comes through litigation where you have to go to a system, a court outside of the handshake agreements that the NFL owners continue to have with one another, right? You have to go outside of that in order to hold them to a higher standard. And that's a shame, first of all. It's sad, but it's the truth.
Brian, the other thing that's happening, it seems more and more women are getting involved in the coaching business, the instruction business, the administrative side of it. What are your thoughts?
Here's the thing. We know this. We know that wisdom does not care about age or gender. Age or gender, wisdom does not care. The Bible calls her a she, so I'll continue to say she. She is welcoming any and all who are available, who turn down her road, who comes to her house and sits and eats and dines with her, right? So if you have the wisdom and if you can see, if you can look at, evaluate talent, if you can lead men, right, and you have the wherewithal to understand these things, absolutely, 100% for it.
In the closing minute, Brian, you've used the word wisdom a lot. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so one of my favorite books is the book of James, and in it it talks about wisdom, talks about having godly wisdom, and if you don't have wisdom, just asking God will give it to you.
Yes.
Without finding fault. So wisdom, to me, is actionable things, specific things that you are doing. A lot of times we have people that say knowledge is power, right? It is potential power. It's powerful when you apply it in wisdom, when it's actionable things. And wisdom is not always something you gain by looking at somebody else's life. Sometimes you have to look back in your life. I think I said it before, you have to reframe what yesterday taught you. Yesterday was painful because of that failure. But if I'm someone that's always looking to learn and to grow, I'm going to pick up the nuggets from that failure of how it's going to, I can apply it differently in the present so that I can use it as wisdom going forward. So that's the power of wisdom. And the Bible also talks about, and you're getting your wisdom, make sure if it costs you everything, get understanding. So wisdom and understanding gives you a better leg up on how to apply the things going forward to, so that you can be a better version. And when you become a better version for yourself, guess who else is going to benefit? If you're a man of your household, your children will see that. Matter of fact, I can get deeper. I know we don't have a lot of time, but if you look at the word Abba, if you look at Father, you look at the Abba, the way that it's talked about in the olden times, Abba talks about the source and the sustainer. Abba, source and sustainer.
Brian Dawkins has been our guest. His book, Good Read, Blessed by the Best, My Journey to Canton and Beyond. This is Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. It's AM 950 and FM 94.9, The Answer in Orlando. We will. Brian Dawkins, our guest in that first segment, longtime NFL safety. A member of the NFL Hall of Fame. He is in Orlando, so we're going to swing down to Dallas. Chris Vanini is there. He's the national college football reporter for The Athletic. Oh, I love The Athletic. And Chris, welcome to Orlando. I'm glad that we have a chance to get to talk college football. How are you?
I am doing well. I appreciate you having me.
Chris, by the way, how would you describe The Athletic? To one who is not familiar with it.
Yeah, it's basically a subscription sports website where we've got stories on basically every major team in American pro sports, plus some in Canada, as well as European soccer. We have a robust college football staff that includes names like Bruce Feldman and Andy Staples, and we cover about 20 different teams with beat writers, you know, your Alabamas, your Michigans, your Clemsons and stuff like that. So it's a company that's been around since 2017, and we've grown really fast in those 5 years. Recently got acquired by the New York Times. So if you're looking for a place to read about sports that's easy to read and doesn't have any advertisements whatsoever on it, The Athletic has that.
What was your reaction to the recent college signing period? Any overall thoughts?
Well, it's interesting because Texas A&M signed what many people consider to be the highest rated recruiting class in the history of modern recruiting rankings, you know, going back two decades or so. They got, I think, 17 top 100 players. Some things that are quite unheard of. Alabama has had the number one class almost every year for the past decade, but A&M got the top class this year. And it's notable because I think every number one class over the last, again, 10-ish years has won a national championship. That's why Alabama keeps winning, because they have the best players. So Texas A&M signs this, you know, big class, and suddenly the expectations there are a lot higher. This was also the first signing class where name, image, and likeness is available to players, where they can make money doing sponsorships and stuff like that. And so coaches have said that's become a big part of the recruiting process. Schools aren't allowed to directly offer these deals, but they can be like, hey, we've got some people involved in the program who will pay you to advertise for their company. And that's created another dynamic in terms of where high school players are going to school.
Your thoughts on the portal, good or bad?
It's good because it's interesting. Only a handful of college sports previously did not allow you to transfer without sitting out. Most NCAA sports don't require that, but football, basketball, and a couple of the other ones did. And so when you've had so many coaches leaving after 1 year with a school, or just, you know, taking all this money to go to other places, people around college sports felt like players needed to have some of that freedom. Now, there's going to be a lot of mistakes. I think we've reached 1,000 players in the portal this year already, and a lot of them are not going to find a home that they were expecting. And so a lot of coaches and people are concerned that players are getting the wrong influence and they're jumping to go transfer, but they don't actually have a place to go and they could get left behind. And that's a very, very real issue. But I think giving players that choice, that freedom to, for one time, they can transfer without penalty. You're allowed to do it once. I think that's important as it relates to player rights and what they're allowed to do.
Chris Vanini is with us, a national college football reporter for The Athletic. Chris, is there a common reason why most kids transfer? Is it about playing time?
That's a big part of it. Obviously, you know, a lot of these guys were stars in high school. And so when you get to college and you have to redshirt and you don't play much that first year, that second year, some players get disgruntled and want to go somewhere where they feel like they can play. They may not find that. That's the thing. The other possibility is the players who are maybe seniors and they haven't played yet and they haven't won a starting job, so they want to go somewhere where they can actually see the field for their last year. Another notable aspect of this is that because of the pandemic, there was very little in-person recruiting over the last year in 2020. It was virtual. It was over the phone. It was over Zoom. Coaches didn't really get to see these players as much as they did. Players didn't get to see campus. So they get to campus in 2021, and it's not what anybody expected. And so I think this first year with the one-time transfer rule has led to more people in the portal than there would be otherwise because they didn't have the full picture during the recruiting process because of the pandemic.
Chris, what is going on with the football situation at Auburn?
Yeah, that's been pretty strange. Brian Harsin, the first-year coach at Auburn, not the first choice for a number of influential boosters, and after going 6-7 in his first year, closing with, I think, a 5-game losing streak, and not signing a very good recruiting class, some people have wanted him out. And there's always drama at Auburn between coaches and athletic directors and boosters. And Auburn's in a place where their biggest rivals are Alabama and Georgia. Georgia just won the national championship. Alabama's got a bunch of national championships. That increases the pressure even more at a place like Auburn. And over the last 2 months, there have been a lot of players and coaches leaving Auburn. I think something like 20 players went into the transfer portal. Some coaches left voluntarily on their own, took a pay cut elsewhere. So the school has been looking into whether or not they can fire Brian Harsin for cause and since not have to pay his buyout. Because if they do have to pay his buyout, that's $18 million, half of which has to be paid within 30 days. And this is just 1 year after Auburn paid a $20 million buyout to a coach, Gus Malzahn, to go away, who's now down there at UCF.
Yes.
So, as the day we're recording this, we don't know what the status is of Brian Harsin. Some people think you can't bring him back after this. Some people think he might survive it. The athletic director there only has 1 year left on his contract. The school just named a new president. So either way, whether it happened now, whether it happens a year from now, there's a lot of transition going on at Auburn, and it's a bit of a mess.
I must ask you about UCF and your thoughts on our local university here.
Yeah, it was obviously a solid first year, I think, for Gus Malzahn, considering all the injuries that they had and everything that they had to go through to pull together a decent, solid record that first year. And UCF had the best transfer signing class of anybody in the group of five. They added the top receiver out of Auburn, Kobe Hudson. They've added a number of Power 5 players to that team, increasing the talent level really quickly. And losing Dylan Gabriel is obviously very tough. but he never quite looked like a fit in Gus Malzahn's offense anyway, which likes to run the quarterback. So getting John Rhys Plumlee from Ole Miss, he'll battle for that starting job. If he fits what Auburn likes to do on offense, I'm sorry, what UCF likes to do on offense, could be a really dangerous team in 2022. There's a lot of talented, skilled players there at running back, at wide receiver. Just got to get the quarterback situation figured out. They've got the plans for the stadium renovation. They're going into the Big 12 soon. So things continue to move up and up and up for UCF.
Chris, tell me your thoughts about the football situation at the University of Florida.
And Billy Napier, a guy who was very with what job he was going to take, what big job, because he had a lot of interest for FP jobs. Mixed for a year ago. Wanted to see a lot of the what he wants to do. It's a job. He of all people, new titles of advocate, game manager, coordinator, all these fans' titles. So he's doing an entire operation, something he learned from his time under Nick Saban at Alabama, under Dabo Sweeney at Clemson. He's been a very strong recruiter. This first year is a tough year to get a full class, but it's he's building for the long term there at Florida, Billy Napier is, and it might take a little bit of time, but I think Florida has to feel pretty good about where they're going.
Should Florida State football fans be encouraged?
Yeah, it's been a tough 2 years for Mike Norvell, obviously, but you knew it was going to be a bit of a rebuild. But this has to be the year. This has to be the season that they get to a bowl game, try to contend for the conference and stuff like that. So, they signed a pretty good recruiting class. You know, they had the number one player, but he jumped ship for Jackson State and Deion Sanders at the last minute. But they still signed a pretty solid recruiting class. But this is going to have to be the year for Mike Norvell. They're going to have to show a lot of progress, something that I think they showed in the second half of last season, even though it's a tough way to end the year losing to Florida. It's certainly not what people around Florida State expect after all those years under Jimbo Fisher and Bobby Bowden. It's been a real rebuild from the ground up.
Chris Vanini is our guest, national college football reporter for The Athletic. He's in Dallas. We've got more with him. I just want to remind you, folks, we're trying to bring Major League Baseball to Orlando, and you can be a big part of it. Go up to the website, OrlandoDreamers.com, OrlandoDreamers.com, and just check in. Say yes. Keep me informed. I'd love to be part of this. Season tickets someday. Yeah, maybe if we can get this. So go up there, OrlandoDreamers.com. I'm Pat Williams. This is Inside the Game. It's AM 950 and FM 94.9, The Answer in Orlando. Back with Chris Vanini. We are chatting with Chris Vanini, national college football reporter for The Athletic. What are your thoughts, Chris, on Deion Sanders at Jackson State? What's going on there?
Yeah, he had a really solid first full season this past fall. Jackson State won the SWAC for the first time in a long time, and he's got a lot of just attention and notoriety coming with that job, but he's also winning. I mean, that was the big question when he got the job was, okay, he might be able to get players there, but can he win? And they won in his first season. And he, again, signed the number one player, number one recruit coming out of high school. So Jackson State's probably going to continue to take a step up. They've become a transfer destination for a lot of players as well. And, you know, Deion Sanders says he's, you know, here to do this to raise the profile of historically black colleges and universities. But if he keeps winning like this, Power 5 jobs are going to come calling for him pretty soon. It sounded like TCU at least had a conversation with him when their job was open. So Deion Sanders is a guy who people have always said he can't do certain things, and through all the flair and dramatics, he does it. You know, whether it's playing the NFL and MLB at the same time, now apparently as a college coach. So his son is the quarterback there, and I think he won the conference freshman of the year, so that's obviously an important foundation. But he's getting a lot of attention and notoriety for black college football. And some people don't like the way it's being done, but kind of the way Deion's always done it.
Chris, I'm going to give you the name of the school. You give us your thoughts on their football situation at this point. Are you ready?
Yep.
University of Miami.
Finally acting like one of the big boys. The money that they spent to get Mario Cristobal and to give him to put together a staff. Miami wants to be one of the best teams in the country again. And it always tried to do so kind of on the cheap. It didn't have support from the school as much. Now it finally does. That could be a real game changer if Miami, under Mario Cristobal now, finally figures things out.
Clemson University.
Still very good, but if it'll get back to that national championship every year type of level. But Clemson has not jumped into the transfer portal like most schools have, and the Tigers have been not as strong, especially in the offensive line in the last couple of years. And if they don't have that elite quarterback play, as we saw this year, they're not as good. So took a step back, but still won 10 games. So kind of got to wait and see.
LSU.
As dramatic as ever, ups and downs, firing Ed Orgeron 2 years after he won a national championship, but things have clearly fallen off. I don't know if Brian Kelly's going to be the best fit for recruiting purposes, but he's a very good coach and should be able to get the most out of what he has there. And what he'll have there is better than what he had at Notre Dame in most years.
Alabama.
Will continue to reload like always. You know, losing in the national championship game is one thing, but as long as Nick Saban is there, they're going to be in the college football playoff. They're going to be contending for the championship. They've got Bryce Young, the Heisman Trophy winner, coming back this year. So once they're just going to continue to march on like they have.
Oklahoma.
Going through a major reset right now. Not only did they lose Lincoln Riley, the head coach, but they lost a lot of players, including both quarterbacks, Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams, who transferred out. So Brent Venables comes in, defense coordinator Clemson. Dylan Gabriel comes in to play quarterback. I don't know if they'll be a top-10 team next year, but Brent Venables seems like the kind of guy who knows what it takes in a few years when that school goes into the SEC, and know how things are done there. So I think he's going to prepare them for the future, but it may be a difficult transition.
Why is Lincoln Riley and Southern Cal apparently a dream matchup?
You know, college football better off and gets more notoriety when USC is good. And USC just has not been USC for quite a long time now. Lincoln Riley brings some star power. He brings some excitement with what he does on offense, with what he does for quarterbacks. And the number of really good transfer players that they've brought in is notable, including Caleb Williams, the quarterback from Oklahoma, who's going to be a sophomore. So it may be, I wouldn't say this first year is guaranteed success for Lincoln Riley because that roster has a lot of holes. But in 2023, we're probably going to see USC contending for the Pac-12 again. And it's been, I think, 6 years now since the Pac-12 even made the college football playoff, which is a big problem. College football is so tilted toward the Southeast right now. It needs some power in the West to keep all those really good California kids from going to the SEC. So if Lincoln Riley, people feel like he can be the guy to kind of reweight the power dynamics in the.
Chris Vanini is with us, national college football reporter for The Athletic. The University of Texas.
may be best positioned with all the turnover going on in the Big 12. Oklahoma has a new head coach. TCU, Texas Tech all have new coaches. Texas is, you know, they don't make a bowl game in Sark's first year. It's a really, really tough first season. But year two is typically when you see where things are going to be. They've got had some really good recruits coming in, talented players. He's got to show a major improvement this year because I don't think the Big 12 is going to be very good. So if there was a year for Texas to finally kind of reassert itself, it has to be now. But, man, the amount of money that they paid to get rid of Tom Herman, who at least had them as a top 25 team, was not a good first year in the Sark.
Tell me about Ohio State and Michigan, and while you're at it, what was Jim Harbaugh's flirtation with the Vikings all about?
Well, I mean, Harbaugh wants to win a Super Bowl. He got there. He got to the Super Bowl as a coach for the 49ers once, and he has a really solid NFL record when he was there, and he wanted to go back. But it doesn't appear the NFL wanted him back enough. The Raiders didn't. The Raiders didn't. The Dolphins didn't. The Bears didn't. He had an interview with the Vikings, but they didn't come to an agreement on things. And I think Harbaugh realizes now, okay, that NFL dream is probably done now. And it sounds like he's committed to staying at Michigan for the rest of this run. And that's obviously good for Michigan. You know, he's been a very solid coacher. They hadn't broken through until this past season, but he's done a very, very good job there. And they will be a solid team again in 2022, but he's going to have to replace both coordinators. He's going to have to replace some key players on defense. Ohio State's going to be the heavy favorite for the Big Ten once again, with C.J. Stroud back at quarterback, among the most returning starters in the country. Ohio State was a strange team this past year. They were not tough enough. They were not fast enough on defense. I think Ryan Day realized that. He overhauled the staff. And I think Ohio State kind of gets back to, you know, being at the top of the Big Ten in the playoff again.
What will Urban Meyer do with the rest of his life?
That's a really good question because he seems like a guy who just can't stay away from coaching, as damaging as that has been to his health. The issue is who's going to hire him. I don't know if anybody in college at the level he wants to coach is going to hire him. I don't see Urban Meyer taking a job in the MAC or something like that to rehabilitate his image or something like that. But I also don't think there's a lot of college presidents out there that want to hire him with everything he's been through the last few years, both with Jacksonville and the end of his tenure at Ohio State. For all the winning he's done, his image took a big, big hit those last couple of years. And I just don't know if there's a he's only going to want to coach at the top programs. And I don't know if any of the top programs have leaders in place that are willing to take a risk on him.
Chris, I must ask you about my alma mater, Wake Forest University. What's going on? Your thoughts?
Dan Clawson continues to do a really, really solid job there, and I think he just got a new contract after some schools were interested in him. I think Sam Hartman, quarterback, is coming back as well. Wake Forest was one of the most fun teams to watch this past season. The offense was really fun. You know, they play in the ACC championship game. They should be really solid once again. You know, it's been a difficult place to continue to win. But Dave Clawson has won everywhere he's been and sustained it. And I think as long as he is there, Wake Forest is going to be in a really good position.
Let's close out with Notre Dame. Your thoughts?
It's interesting. Promoting defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman to head coach, I think, really changes the image of Notre Dame from being kind of the old traditional power, you know, to now having a young, energetic black head coach, really could get, I think, a lot more kids to look at Notre Dame than maybe did otherwise. They're not going to join a conference. They're not going to go to the ACC. And if the playoffs expands at some point, Notre Dame will be in a great spot to get a bid every year. because of how it's set up. So, you know, Notre Dame's always going to be kind of in that spot. We don't yet know what Freeman will be like as a head coach. He hasn't been coaching for all that long, not very long at all. So now he takes on one of the biggest jobs in the country, and have to kind of wait and see how he handles that. He doesn't have a track record like a Brian Kelly going down to LSU type of deal.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a wonderful discussion about college football with Chris Vanini, no better authority, national college football reporter for The Athletic. Just to let you know, you've been listening to Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. We gather like this every weekend and get to talk sports with some fascinating people. Today it was Brian Dawkins and Chris Vanini. So stay tuned all day long to AM 950 and FM 94.9, The Answer. We're back next weekend for more Inside the Game. We'll see you then.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.